This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Eliminate bags under your eyes in minutes with Instantly Ageless from GCNLife.com.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
Generally, they're political foes, but shortly, New York's Democratic Governor Andrew Cuomo is going to be a guest in the Oval Office with Republican President Trump. The two are going to get together to discuss the coronavirus, the president making the announcement yesterday at the coronavirus briefing.
They're getting it together in New York. A lot of good things are happening in New York, and I think the governor's coming to the Oval Office. Andrew is going to be coming in with some of his people, so we look forward to that.
Another Cuomo in the news. The governor's brother, Chris Cuomo, has finally emerged from his basement after a battle with coronavirus. After spending weeks quarantined there in his basement, the CNN host documented the moment in a video on Instagram yesterday, noting that he had been cleared to come out by the CDC. This is USA Radio News.
This is a Corona Crisis Self-Reliance Alert. If you're worried about the power grid in the current crisis and want to generate your own supply of off-the-grid electrical power, just in case, pay close attention. Here's why. A limited supply of solar backup generators will be available again in the next 2 weeks. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving electrical backup power when you get off the grid. And unlike gas generators, these solar generators run quietly, emit no fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Dangerous weather, social unrest, or overloaded grids this summer will not be a problem if you go to mysolarbackup.com and get your solar backup generator. We regret that supplies are limited and only available on a first-come, first-served basis. Check availability at mysolarbackup.com. Never suffer painful power outages again. Go to mysolarbackup.com. That's mysolarbackup.com.
A Republican governor who's been very critical of the Trump administration's response to the coronavirus pandemic has secured a 500,000 test kits from South Korea. Governor Larry Hogan of Maryland, with the help of his wife, First Lady Yumi Hogan, a Korean immigrant.
We convened countless calls nearly every night. Sometimes it seemed like all night, working through language barriers and a 13-hour time difference.
At last evening's coronavirus update at the White House, President Trump was clearly unimpressed.
He needed to go to South Korea. I think he needed to get a little knowledge would have been helpful.
Some governors are already working to roll back coronavirus restrictions. The states of Georgia, Florida, Minnesota, Tennessee, Texas, and Wisconsin will be easing those restrictions effective the 1st of May. Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer has just said he thinks a deal is at hand for a small business relief package, and this is USA Radio News.
Do the letters IRS give you anxiety? I'm Dan Pilla. I've defended people from the IRS for more than 40 years. My book, How to Get Tax Amnesty, created the tax resolution industry and is responsible for helping hundreds of thousands of people. It can help you, too. If you're a non-filer or facing IRS enforcement right now, your case is unique. You need real help, not cookie-cutter advice. My clients get my personal attention. Buy my book at danpilla.com and get a free consultation directly with me. That's danpilla.com. Let's start solving your tax problem right now.
President Trump is temporarily halting immigration into the U.S. amid the COVID-19 outbreak. The president saying on Twitter that his executive order will protect American jobs. The president previously suspended travel from China and Europe. More than 42,000 people have now died in the U.S. from the respiratory illness. It looks like airlines will be keeping employees during the coronavirus pandemic. The Treasury Department says agreements have now been reached between passenger air carriers and the Trump administration, agreements that will go through the payroll support program to keep paying workers during the crisis. That includes Allegiant, American, Delta, Southwest, Spirit, and United Airlines. South Korea's government says there is no indication that North Korean leader Kim Jong-un is in grave condition after a CNN report suggested that that was the case. A spokesman for the South Korean president says that there's been no unusual movement inside North Korea in recent days. CNN had cited a U.S. official who said there were reports of Kim being in dire health and that he was being constantly monitored with the possibility that he might not be able to continue to lead that country. You can always find us online. We're at usaradio.com. And for USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
If you're living with diabetes and using insulin, you know the pain of pricking your fingers over and over again. Ouch! Well, by wearing a small remote device called a continuous glucose monitor, or CGM, you can reduce the pain of pricking your fingers. Here's what our customers had to say.
Painless. No more pricking my finger.
No finger pricks.
Convenience. They delivered it free and they took care of all the paperwork.
If you're testing your blood sugar four or more times per day, injecting insulin three or more times per day, or using an insulin pump, a CGM can help you. It's accurate, easy to use, and if you have Medicare, you can get a new CGM at little or no out-of-pocket cost. Plus, get free shipping of your new CGM, and we can bill Medicare for you.
Honestly, I had my doubts, but that new CGM is painless.
Call now. 800-471-7065. 800-471-7065. 800-471-7065. That's 800-471-7065.
Fresh and independent. This is Bill Martinez.
Back with the America, 6 minutes after the top of the hour. Great to have you along with us as always. And we've got the former Navy SEAL Jack Carr back with us. I think the last time he and I were able to visit, it was in Las Vegas, Nevada. But it is a shell of itself these days, Jack. A friend of mine was telling me there in Vegas that, you know, when they got the order to close down all the casinos, this one casino in particular had been open 24/7 for 20 years. Nobody could find the keys to lock up the door.
Oh, that's hilarious. Is that crazy? Case there, though.
Yeah.
There's some place that never closes. If a friend of mine, a doctor, just went out there and was helping put together some plans to help them reopen in a way that's safe for everyone. So, and he took pictures of the strip and sent them to me, and it's a ghost town. It's incredible.
Well, Jack, this is a tough thing when you look at risk-reward proposition. I mean, your life, you've measured risk-reward. You do this, strategically, not so much. I mean, some people may look at it and it seems so seamless, you know, when we see you do it, that you think, oh, it's just automatic. But there's a lot that goes into any kind of risk-reward equation, is there not?
That's right. So, and everyone does this. It's not just military. It's not just when there's a global pandemic and you need to reopen an economy. Every single day, people are evaluating risk subconsciously, some consciously, and they're mitigating that risk some way, shape, or form. And that could be as easy as, hey, do I get in the lane where there's no barrier between me and another car? Do I stay in the right-hand lane and take a little longer to get to work? You're evaluating risk. Same thing for us when we're hitting a target. We're looking at the time and the place of that engagement to make it as advantageous as possible for us in the military. And we're mitigating the risk as best as we possibly can on getting to and from that target based on a host of factors, whether it's weather, assets, IED threats in the area, all sorts of different things. Mm-hmm. So this case is no different. Everyone is looking at how to mitigate risk and how to get this economy back up and running again.
Exactly. Well, as a former Navy SEAL and a military man, you understand the chain of command. You understand orders. We've got 99% of America that's never been in the military. Maybe they may have had a relative in the military, but they've never really experienced what it is to really, follow orders without question. Because when you get in a situation of war, which the president has declared this, in a sense, a war against a hidden enemy, well, then you need to know who you're listening to and who you're taking orders from. And part of the challenge that we have in a free America is sometimes people say, you're not the boss of me.
That's right. I hear that from my kids every now and again, and from my wife all the time. So anyone who's married should understand how to deal with this situation. But no, you're absolutely right. And it's tough because there is so much politicizing of this particular event, and it's so hard to know who to trust. We have 24-hour news cycles. Now we have that compounded by social media input from everyone has a voice. There's no editorial board for people that are tweeting out there. There's no sanity checks, and even some of the editorial boards out there have agendas as well. So it's very tough to figure out who you need to listen to, who's telling the truth, how much risk there actually is in doing some of these things. It's just a very difficult time for people, and I don't have the answers to that either. I'm like every other citizen. I'm looking at these things, and I'm getting these inputs as I walk back by the TV, and I'm hearing the talking heads talk about one thing, and I'm seeing the World Health Organization over here, and I'm seeing this tweet over here when I get on to do my thing on social media. So there are so many inputs, and there's not one source that you can really trust in this situation. So for me, you know, I'm erring on the side of caution with a family, with a special needs child whose immune system may or may not be compromised. We don't know. But for me, it's just there's so much confusion out there, it makes sense to err on the side of caution, to stay in, to wash my hands, to not go out, to hunker down and wait this thing out.
Exactly.
But for us, what I think it's most important for people that are doing, and I think it's smart to do that because it is so confusing. I'm not the only one that's confused about who to listen to and who not to. So I think in this case, it makes sense for people to do that, to hunker down, see what happens here, and then we get this economy back up and running as soon as we possibly can, as soon as we get all these tests out there, figure out who's actually had it and who hasn't, because there might be a ton of people out there who actually have these positive antibodies that don't even know it, and we could get this economy up and running a lot earlier. So it's a tough time for everybody. There's no doubt about that.
Well, the problem that you have here, unlike war, in war, there's pretty much, it's a pretty clear stated mission, is it not? I mean, in most cases, that here it is, this is our objective, this is what we have to do. Here in this particular case, there's so many dynamics. I mean, you've got the health proposition, you've got the business proposition, the economic proposition, and then you got the political proposition that's coming into play that's clouding up the matter even more so because the Democrats, and I would say Republicans and anybody that's a political animal, looks at this as how can we get a political advantage? And if that's paramount, then you are abandoning what the main focus should be. And this is what we love about the military, is that when it comes down to the military, it's about saving lives. You want to make sure that you get out of the mission on the other side and your team is intact, that there's no casualties, right?
That's right. And there's always going to be confusion. You know, there's a clear-cut mission and objective, and then there's a commander's intent that's important for when things go south. And when all those other factors, like we're talking about now, come into play, that fog of war, the confusion of the battlefield, the enemy adapting to you as you're trying to adapt to the enemy in real time, in a firefight. So there's all those things that that come into play. And same thing here, same thing in this situation. I would say that the left, for lack of a better term, is politicizing it more than the other side, it seems anyway, from the inputs that I'm processing. And I don't know how we could have handled it. It's a tough situation. I'll just say that. It's a tough situation. You and I saw each other last. That's probably one of the last big gatherings before this. And we were starting to get inklings back then that there was something going on in China. Mm-hmm. Not too many people were paying attention to it, but a few of us that pay attention to these things had noticed it. And we saw each other probably one of the last times that you could go out and spend time in public before this thing hit and before all the confusion. And not necessarily chaos, but this crisis came to hit us hard. So it's just a tough time for everybody. So I think what the best thing people can do is take a breath, like we do in the military. When I talk about all that confusion of the battlefield, what we want to do is take a breath, look around, and make a call. Mm-hmm. So for us as families, as communities, states, federal government, same thing. And at the federal government, I can see it being a lot more difficult because of all the nasty politics at play. But here, let's just talk about it at a familial level, at the community level. Take a breath, look around, make a call, do the things we're supposed to be doing, adapt as best you can with your family, with your business, and take notes, more importantly, on how to better be prepared for something like this in the future, whether it's a pandemic, whether it's a natural disaster, whether it's a terrorist attack or multiple of these things put together, that's what can make us stronger as a country and a stronger citizenry moving forward, is for people to realize that, hey, maybe we need to be a little more self-sufficient, a little more self-reliant,
exactly.
Which really forms the foundation of this country going forward.
Well, Jack, when we take a breath, we're also going to reassess and remind ourselves of what the mission is, because sometimes that's what chaos does, is it distracts us and it confuses us of the mission. So what is the mission for the everyday citizen who is faced with this pandemic today?
Yeah, so I think it's that part's fairly obvious, is that it's to do your part if you can. And not everybody can stay home. People are out there on the front lines each and every day, doctors, nurses, EMTs, police officers, firefighters. We have reservists called up to help. We have active duty military helping. Those people can't stay home with their families. So for us, because of all the uncertainty, that's our job. Those of us that can stay home, that's our job, is to do that.
We've got to go to break, Jack, so we'll pick it up from there when we come back. More from Jack Carr after
this. Sounds good.
Anytime, any place, anywhere, radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
Oh, so you're wearing a mask every day now? Where are you getting them?
The same website where I get my neck and body wraps, sunnybay.com. And they're handmade.
Really?
Just like their wraps in the USA.
Oh, and good quality?
Oh, very good. These are disposable face masks.
And good price?
That's the best part. I get a 10-pack for only $6.
Wow.
Yes, as a public service, we're now sourcing disposable face masks with level 1 protection at sunnybay.com. Get a 10-pack of high-quality, more breathable face masks, only $6. Our face masks are hypoallergenic, latex-free, and made for stress-free all-day wearing. Or choose our N95 respirator masks, 2-pack for only $6. Supplies are limited, so place your order at sunny-bay.com, a biomed DB design company right here in the USA. Go to sunny-bay.com and purchase your disposable face masks online. 10 masks for only $6. Just click sunny-bay.com. That's sunny-bay.com.
The final phase of extermination is set to commence now. And as population die-off becomes evident, you know it is the time of punishment in all that is written. The cover for mass die-off is evolution and global warming frauds, also used as false proof of their Christ. They are from the lines that were disinherited 2,000 years ago. Now they claim to be his Christ based upon blood type, DNA, and long lifespan. Go to unveilingthem.com. That's UNVEILINGthem.com.
Attention, this is a public notice from the Social Security Disability Helpline. If you're one of the millions of Americans who are disabled and unable to work, you may be eligible for disability benefits from Social Security. Receiving benefits is your right. If you suffer from physical or mental disability, whether you're applying for the first time or you've already been denied, we can help. We'll evaluate your situation and deal with Social Security on your behalf. Best of all, there's no fee until you receive your benefits. Remember, we only get paid if you win your case. There are many reasons and conditions that may make you eligible for disability benefits. Many of them you may not be aware of. So if you're disabled and unable to work, call now to get started with your free, no-obligation consultation.
800-368-0123. 800-368-0123. That's 800-368-0123.
Want to fly somewhere? Looking for cheap flights or cheap tickets? Then call. That's right. Call the low-cost airline travel hotline now for prices so low, we can't publish them anywhere. Low-cost airlines has all kinds of cheap travel deals. Fly domestically and save up to 75%. You can even fly internationally and save even more. Yes, fly anywhere in the world and save a lot of money on your plane tickets. We'll even save you money with cheap travel deals on hotels, rental cars, even complete travel packages. So don't book your tickets until you call us first for the absolute cheapest lowest prices on U.S. and international airline tickets and hotels. Call right now for prices so low they can't be published. Travel experts are here 24-7 to help. 800-430-7694. 800-430-7694. 800-430-7694. That's 800-430-7694.
Someone once said, live free or die, right? Bill Martinez, live.
Fresh and independent, just the way you like to hear from us 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, 9 to noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific. We're visiting with Jack Carr, critically acclaimed author of The Terminal List, who the last time we were together in Nevada, we talked about this, but he's got a new thriller called The Savage Son. You've done it again, Jack. You've put us on another one of those thriller rides you love to do.
Thank you so much. Yeah, this is the third one in the series, and this is the one I wanted to start with, actually, when I wrote down the 5, 6, 7, 8 different ideas to figure out which book I needed to write first. And this is the one I wanted to do, but I knew that the characters weren't yet at a place where I could explore the dark side of man through the hunter-hunted dynamic, which is what Savage Son is all about. So I knew I had to start with The Terminal List. I had to come out swinging hard with something that was very primal, very visceral, extremely hard-hitting, and then move that tale of revenge into a story of redemption with violent redemption, I like to call it, with True Believer, the second novel.
Right.
And then at the end of that one, I knew that the characters were ready to explore the dark side of man, do that hunter-hunter dynamic like I wanted to do since sixth grade, since I first read The Most Dangerous Game, which is a short story written by Richard Connell back in 1924. So this is the one. It's been in the works for a long time.
Yeah, that's the way it is. It's always that plus a lifetime, right? Like when you and I were talking in Vegas, that who would have thunk that a Navy SEAL would be writing, you know, action thrillers like you're doing now?
Well, I always knew those are the two things I wanted to do with my life. One, to serve my country in uniform, specifically as a SEAL, and the other was to write fiction, because a lot of the things that I learned about the military and special operations and intelligence apparatus as a kid or growing up before the military came from the pages of fictional thrillers by guys like Nelson DeMille, David Morrell, A.J. Quinnell, Jason Pollock, Tom Clancy, Mark Olden, Stephen Hunter, all these guys who had protagonists with backgrounds that I wanted to have in real life one day. So I always knew that after the military, I would do exactly what those guys were doing and write thrillers in this genre. So I feel very fortunate to be doing that today.
Do you pinch yourself sometimes to realize that, you know, I mean, your writing style, you are gifted for this. You really have a command of the concept. I mean, this is an absolute blessing. You know, it's one thing to say, gosh, I really would like to do this. But sometimes, you know, people in the process realize, I'd love to do it, but I just don't have the goods. You know, I'd like to play in the NBA, but being 5'7", I'm at a disadvantage just walking on the floor. Pretty good basketball player, but nonetheless, you know, I need another foot, you know, to really make the difference and have a fair chance to win, as we like to say. But for you, you know, it's one thing to have the desire, but you started putting this together, and wow. Here you are with your third installment, and you know, you got to really feel like wow, you're blessed, and you're a blessing in sharing these stories with everybody.
Well, I certainly feel fortunate, and luckily, height has nothing to do with writing. So I'm lucky there, I guess. I'm a horrible basketball player, but what it is, it takes doing the work. It takes sitting down and doing the work. Flipping that switch, becoming a professional, deciding that you are a writer now, and that is what you do. So there's no excuse. That takes the excuses off the board.
Exactly.
And I did that immediately. As soon as I got out of the military, I flipped that switch and said, okay, I'm a professional. I'm a writer. Mm-hmm. That's what I do. But really, I was so lucky that growing up, my mom was a librarian. We were surrounded by books and a love of reading. So I read all those guys back in the 80s, 90s, and those were my professors in the art of storytelling, all those guys I mentioned previously. That gave me a foundation, but at the same time, I was reading nonfiction, so I was studying terrorism, insurgencies, counterinsurgencies, warfare. So I was doing that academic study at the same time, and both of those things I did continually throughout my time in the military. But added to that was the time downrange in Iraq and Afghanistan. Those experiences, those feelings, those emotions that I get to weave in to a fictional narrative. So
exactly.
All those things came together at the right time and place as I exited the military and started writing. So I feel like I have a probably, anyway, a very, fairly robust background from which to build.
Jack, how do your fellow SEALs feel about your writing? I know traditionally the SEALs have been a very private fraternity. It's not necessarily that you're, you know, telling real-life SEAL stories here, but I got to imagine there might be some conflict with some SEALs because they like to maintain anonymity.
I mean, maybe, but their fiction certainly helps because there is controversy, of course, on the side when people do when write nonfiction about either their time in the military or a certain mission. But you know, I enjoyed reading all these books growing up by people who had real world experiences in World War II, in Korea, in Vietnam, in particular. So there is a history in this country, and not just modern times. I mean, Grant has his memoirs, Civil War. So there's a history not just in this country but worldwide of people leaving military service and writing about their time. What that is that person's perspective on an experience or on a time, their time, whole time in uniform, whatever it may be. So it's a first-person account, and that's how they should be looked at, as that person's perspective. And it can be part of a larger history at some point when someone goes back and looks at things more holistically, and it'll be an important part of that. But most importantly, it's tough for kids to find heroes these days, to find people to look up to, because there are so many people they can find on social media who aren't necessarily living by the ideals and have the character that us as parents would want our kids to emulate. So when our kids read a book by a Medal of Honor recipient from Iraq or Afghanistan, and most of those, I mean, all of those books that I've read so far talk about selflessness, talk about service, talk about dedication to country, dedication to the team, all these things. And those books written by Medal of Honor recipients, I mean, those guys got that, received that medal because they did something that they thought was going to get them killed. And they put their life on the line, like thinking that they weren't going to make it back for their fellow soldier. So for a kid, especially in that middle school age, to be reading books like that, I think it is nothing but positive. So, and it's those people that are writing those books turning those experiences into something positive going forward. And, so that's how I look at the nonfiction side of people who get out of the military. Right? I look at it as an overall positive.
Well, I'm glad you put it in that perspective, because when you consider that probably 99% of Americans will not be on a field of battle, they're not going to be dodging bullets or hearing incoming, but for them to get some sense of what it's like out there on the field of battle, and that what the mission is, what the focus is, what the commitment is, it still comes down to liberty for all, does it not?
That's right. It's selflessness and service, which are what most of those books highlight. There's some great podcasts out there where they talk through their experiences, so it's pretty raw. Jocko Willink has those guys on all the time, and they're relating their experiences as part of the conversation to someone else, and you as the third-person listener are then part of that conversation. So you can read the book, you can listen to those, and you can share that with your family, particularly kids in that middle school, high school age group that are really, whether they know it or not, they're really looking for people to emulate. They're looking for someone to follow, or at least an inspiration. And it doesn't have to be inspiring them to go into the military. It's just going to be inspiring them to get up when knocked down, because all of us are going to face adversity in life. We're all going to get knocked down. We're all going to face transitions. So they can take the lessons from those books that are fairly extreme and then apply them to their lives moving forward. So I think they're important books to read.
Well, Jack Carr, according to your thriller, A Savage Son, what do you want the audience, the reader, to take away from your book?
So all of the books have themes, and they're not just, you can grab them off the shelf as you're getting on your plane, and, well, I guess not now, but getting off and go on vacation to read on the beach, and you can escape into those pages and have a great ride. So that's one part of it. But the other part of it is that you can kind of internalize those emotions and feelings behind certain events that I was involved in downrange, and you can sense the protagonist of these stories. I didn't just make them make up those feelings and emotions behind what we've seen. They come from a real place. So I touch on some of those subjects, like liberties and freedoms in Christ. encroachment of government power, and all those things I think will be themes in all my novels, because they're things that I think about all the time. I think about the freedoms and liberties we have because of what people sacrificed from the inception of this country up until today so we could have these freedoms, and how the federal government is encroaching on those freedoms on almost a daily basis. So I think that'll be a theme that, because it's so near and dear to my heart, I want to turn this country over to my kids and grandkids so they have those same freedoms. So I think that'll be something that's woven into all the books.
Well, as we wrap things up, we'll leave you with this final admonition from Jack Carr. He says, our enemies are watching. Every nation is taking notes on our response to a pandemic. And if COVID was in fact made in a Chinese lab, Jack Carr has been with us. His brand new book, The Savage Son, linked on our website at BillMartinezLive.com. Thank you, Jack.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problem now by calling the experts at U.S. Tax Shield and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that may allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. U.S. Tax Shield offers a price protection guaranteed quote to get you protected today. U.S. Tax Shield is A-plus rated with the Better Business Bureau, so call now. 800-536-4436. That's 800-536-4436. U.S. Tax Shield. 800-536-4436.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
Generally, they're political foes, but shortly, New York's Democratic Governor Andrew Cuomo is going to be a guest in the Oval Office with Republican President Trump. The two are going to get together to discuss the coronavirus, the president making the announcement yesterday at the coronavirus briefing.
They're getting it together in New York. A lot of good things are happening in New York, and I think the governor's coming to the Oval Office. Andrew is going to be coming in with some of his people, so we look forward to that.
Another Cuomo in the news. The governor's brother, Chris Cuomo, has finally emerged from his basement after a battle with coronavirus. After spending weeks quarantined there in his basement, the CNN host documented the moment in a video on Instagram yesterday, noting that he had been cleared to come out by the CDC. This is USA Radio News.
The Hebo Tea Club's original pure powdery Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. So it naturally has antifungal, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-infection, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. But maybe more importantly, the Hebo Tea Club's original pure powdery Arco Super Tea builds corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer happens to die in oxygen. The tea is great for healthy people and can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The Hebo Tea Club's original pure Pau de Arco Super Tea is only $34.95 plus shipping. Order now at ShopSuperTea.com or call 818-984-6100. That's ShopSuperTea.com or call 818-984-6100. ShopSuperTea.com.
Getting America back on track. Yeah. Bill Martinez Live.
Hey, we're back with you 28 minutes before the top of the hour. For more information on the show, go to BillMartinezLive.com. Well, Tim, we had a lot of great guests today, as we generally do. We work hard to, you know, get you people that are very topical and contemporary, that take you deeper than the 8-second sound bites. I mean, there's so many outlets that are limited and, limited by the amount of time that they have to interview their guests. And for us, we've designed a format in such a way to where we can get deeper into the issues. Like I say, you know, do a deeper dive. These 8-second sound bites, I've maintained that if your worldview is based on 8-second sound bites, I mean, it's rather dangerous. I mean, think about it. The depth of your knowledge is about the depth of a bumper sticker, if that's all fair, right? So, anyway, this is why we do the show, the manner in which we do. So if you miss something and you say, gosh, you know, I really want to hear, you know, that interview that was conducted earlier with Chris Farrell from Judicial Watch, and bring us up to speed on coronavirus. Also, you know, the latest saga of Hillary Clinton and her emails. Also, the IG report, how so much was redacted, but yet so telling. You know, with that, but as I shared with Chris, I wasn't surprised, because let's face it, Horowitz is he's a company man. He's going to protect the institution, and for him to come back and offer some of the conclusions that he did, I'm thinking, okay, what did I miss here? Because based on the evidence, as I understood, and of course, he even has more evidence, because, you know, that was all redacted, and he's able to, you know, go down a lot deeper. But like everything that is handled by the three-letter agencies, you know, we will tell you what we will tell you when we tell you. It's all very conditionalized, right? And so we're not getting the whole truth and nothing but. And you look, again, at a person's worldview, and you look at his perspective. I mean, did you really think that Horowitz was going to come out and really indict his home institution and indict them for corruption? And, you know, when you have all these other incidences, and I'm just saying evidence that's out there in the public record, well, I don't know what else to call it but, you know, corruption. You know, the stuff that went on beyond, you know, as some have called them, the lovebirds in a stroke and page. You know, it's like, wait a minute, this is a disaster that this is going on, the way this thing played out. And then also it leads you to believe and implicate, you know, our former president or our president at the time, you know, Barack Obama. You know, what did he know? When did he know it? You know, what's all that about? And that this happened on his watch. It didn't happen on, you know, President Trump, but people forget, because they're so focused on, you know, being so upset that somebody outside of the normal channels, you know, wasn't a senator. I mean, even though Barack Obama was a senator, not even a full-term senator. He's a junior senator. He gets elected president, and all of a sudden it's like all glory and honor, and this guy's the greatest president ever. And, you know, you look at the historical fact and the fruit of his presidency, and many people still believe that. I'm sorry, I can't connect that dots. I got to be honest with you. I just don't. I see it, sadly and disappointingly, as just a horrendous disaster. As he said, he wanted to fundamentally transform. And he and the forces behind him that are quite evident in the Democratic Party today, that's their goal, is that they really don't believe in the capitalistic system. They feel like it's run its course. They've always had a better idea, and they were cheated. They were cheated out of the full expression of this idea when Hillary Clinton couldn't deliver the goods, and she lost to Donald Trump. And how dare Donald Trump erode all the ground that the progressives had gained during the 8 years of Barack Obama? I mean, here's somebody, he's not even part of the club. I mean, he doesn't even have a special decoder ring. He doesn't have the secret handshake, the special ears, you know, that you're supposed to wear on top of your hat. Those are missing. And, you know, and he's now in the Oval Office. My goodness, this is just an absolute, absolute disaster. Our next guest that we have with us is the author of the book Fighting for Space, Two Pilots and Their Historic Battle for Female Spaceflight. Amy Shira Teitel is our guest, and she joins us now. Amy, welcome to the show. How are you?
Good, good. How are you this morning?
Hey, I'm doing terrific, staying well and healthy. I'm sure you are as well in the midst of this this pandemic that we're dealing with. But I'm encouraged. America, you know, we are a rebellious group, but at the end of the day, we still love, for the most part, we love the red, white, and blue, and the values that this country stands for. And there's a lot of good coming out of this. I think it's helping to, maybe repurpose some priorities that we've had in our life, and a growing appreciation for our neighbors. I even had one lady, she wrote me a note. I love this. She goes, my God, Bill, I found my husband. He was sitting there on the couch. I kind of had to, I kind of flinched there for a moment. I hadn't seen him for so long. And, you know, so the coronavirus is opening our eyes to a lot of possibilities. And I believe in the midst of some bad, some good things.
definitely have to find some little silver linings in a situation like this. So,
well, without a doubt. Yeah. Well, we have a couple of minutes left on this segment, but so this is going to be an extended introduction. Amy's new book, Fighting for Space, is the mostly unknown tale of Jackie Cochran and Jerry Cobb, two accomplished aviatrixes, one generation apart, who each dreamed of being the first woman in space, but along the way battled their ego, their expectations, and ultimately the patriarchal society that stood between them and the stars. And I appreciate, Amy, that you brought in the human element as a consideration to this. It wasn't just, you know, men against women. Part of their own humanity comes into play in this conflict, right?
Oh, absolutely. Writing about this, you can't just make it men versus women as much as, you know, people would like it to be a feminist ethic, because at the end of the day, women are people too.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And, especially in this case, have egos and have their self-interested desires. And that's ultimately, like, it's not a female story. It's really a human story.
Mm-hmm.
And their variety and kind of, you know, different characteristics are really what makes them interesting women and interesting people to follow.
And unique women. I mean, to have this kind of ambition where most girls would settle and say, okay, well, that's not for me. I don't see another woman who's there, so I don't have anybody to look to. I mean, these are just, you know, I think this, you know, in terms of humanity, it's really the best of our humanity happens to be in dresses and skirts and pan outfits. But regardless, I mean, they're just ambitious and they're saying, why not? I love this spirit.
Yeah, these women are definitely women who knew what they wanted and were going to get it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if anyone told them not to, they'd say, okay, that's your opinion. I'm going to continue going to get it.
Right. Exactly. And here, you know, Jackie Cochran, it wasn't like she was always into aviation. I mean, she didn't learn to fly until she was an adult, right?
Yeah. Jackie is really, like, the biggest takeaway in writing this, and I hope when people are reading it, is just how much you don't have to do what anyone else tells you you should or should not be doing.
Mm-hmm.
Jackie's such an amazing, amazing figure from history who has just been relegated to footnotes for some reason. She learned to fly as an adult in the 1930s when it was still really new and really dangerous and still relatively rare for a woman to do it. And by the end of the decade was not only winning all of the awards and, you know, had curried the favor of presidents, she
mm-hmm.
also launched a massive cosmetics industry on the side.
Wow.
Which mm-hmm. in itself was, you know, she had the cutting edge designers actually in the aviation industry working on her packaging. I mean, everything was integrated for her. And everything she took on, she did to the fullest extent.
Mm-hmm. And had an opportunity to be part of the Women's Auxiliary Service Pilots during World War II, right?
Yeah, she actually led it. That was her kind of a brainchild. She knew women would have a role to play in the event that America entered the Second World War. In 1939, she actually brought the idea to Eleanor Roosevelt, who was very forward-thinking in terms of what women could do to contribute,
mm-hmm.
And was ultimately sent to England to see what England was doing with the Air Transport Auxiliary, which was using women pilots. And kind of took those lessons and developed a huge program. There were over 1,000 pilots in the so-called WAF. Developed this huge program that saw women doing every possible kind of flying that men were doing, with the exception of combat, with the goal
right.
of freeing up male pilots for those necessary combat roles.
Amy, we got to go to break. We've got more from the space flight historian after this. Stay with us. Just about 18 before the top of the hour.
The headlines. You know, health insurance is a real mess right now. Premiums have skyrocketed, and in most cases, you're stuck with your plan until open enrollment. But there's a government rule that allows you to qualify for lower health insurance rates if your life has changed. That means if you've changed jobs, if you're having a child, if you're getting married, if you're getting divorced, even if you run a small business or you're self-employed, this law may qualify you to get lower health insurance rates. Call the Health Insurance Hotline today. Learn how this 10-minute call can help you get lower health insurance rates. This is a free service to help consumers learn the laws to help them qualify for lower health insurance rates. So call right now to learn more.
800-610-3630. 800-610-3630. 800-610-3630. That's 800-610-3630. Paid for by GoHealth.
Packages start at $39.99 a month with signed agreement. Restrictions apply. Speak to a representative for complete offer details. See Vivint.com for license details.
Homeowners, if you're looking for the best in home security and smart home technology at a price you can actually afford, we have great news. You can now get Vivint's award-winning smart home security systems starting at about a dollar a day. U.S. News and World Report has recognized Vivint as the top home security system of 2019, calling the Vivint system the best for a complete package of home security and automation, the best pro-installed home security system, and the best home security system with cameras. And right now, you can get Vivint's best home security and smart technology for about a dollar a day. Plus, get free professional installation. Protect your home and loved ones for as little as a dollar a day. Call right now for your home security consultation.
800-962-6082. 800-962-6082. That's 800-962-6082.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veterans, nonprofits, and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
We have all seen and perhaps used the alcohol-based hand sanitizers. Have you ever noticed how it dries your skin and as soon as the alcohol evaporates, it's no longer effective? With bacteria and virus problems, sanitizers and hand washing are the first line of defense against infectious disease. GCNteam.com has alcohol-free antibacterial soap and foam meeting or exceeding all requirements as set forth by the United States Food and Drug Administration as a first aid antiseptic. When it comes to sanitizers, it only makes sense that it lasts till the next application and doesn't dry and crack your skin, inviting infection. For long-lasting alcohol-free sanitizing, come to GCNteam.com keyword antibacterial. That's GCNteam.com, antibacterial, or call 877-878-4203. 877-878-4203.
Values, faith, service, they still exist here. Bill Martinez, live.
They exist here, and hopefully, we're continuing to re-embrace these core values as we deal with this pandemic, as we find ourselves thinking, a little bit deeper about these important issues, about our families, our relationships, and certainly our country. I'm Bill Martinez, 14 minutes before the top of the hour, and the name of the brand new book is Fighting for Space, Two Pilots in Their Historic Battle for Female Space Flight. I'll tell you, this is really interesting stuff. A walk down his history memory lane, and you can't help but appreciate the courage and the ambition of these two women who set records, and I would say, Amy, remain an example to other would-be female, space, space and pilots.
I absolutely say so. Though I'd extend it to just women who are doing something that's untypically feminine, maybe, or women kind of trying to break into a man's world, because that's really, you know, the whole crux of the issue of women wanting to be pilots and then astronauts in the span of the book is really the 30s through the 60s. It's really about how women kind of fought to borrow my own title, they fought for space in this male-dominant landscape. That's kind of the idea. So it's beyond that. It's really just sort of, you know, anything you want to do that is typically a male pursuit, it's still really tough for women to kind of break in and be taken seriously and be given the same opportunities. So it's really their fight applies, I think, to a lot of people, which is kind of the enduring legacy they have.
Well, Amy Sherrett-Tytel is a spaceflight historian, author, and public speaker who, much like her subjects, is one of the few academically trained young women in her field. So you really, I mean, this is a natural bond between the three of you.
There's definitely, it was interesting writing this. When I started writing this book, I was the same age that Jerry was when she took her fight to fly in space to a congressional subcommittee hearing in Washington. So it was really weird to be reading about it and reading the transcripts and writing about it and realize that she's taking on Washington at the same age I'm sitting here reading about her taking on Washington. It was a weird parallel there.
Yeah. I bet. Well, how did this story, come into your orbit?
Well, this is a story that is kind of makes the rounds when you're a space history nerd like me. It makes the rounds pretty regularly, and it kind of sneaks into pop culture a lot. People often tell the story of the so-called Mercury 13, which is this group of women pilots who, quote-unquote, took the astronaut test and were qualified to fly in space but weren't allowed to fly because they were women and it was male-dominant spaceflight. Mm-hmm. That's the story that goes around. They're kind of led by Jerry Cobb, and that story never really worked for me because I've spent so many years digging into the deep history of NASA and its creation. And I, from, you know, reading the story in more detail, realized that there's no way that these women could possibly have met the astronaut requirements for NASA. So why are they treated and, you know, written about in the press and by historians as though they were qualified? Mm-hmm. So once I started getting more into the story, I started realizing that there's a lot more. It was less that they were qualified and more that the media heard the words woman and astronaut in the same sentence and kind of squished them together to create the idea of woman astronauts. And the other facet that kind of jumped out to me was Jackie Cochran is always treated as the villain in the typical story because she actually testified against fast-tracking women in space in the 1960s. She was in favor of a dedicated research program into women as astronauts, knowing that gathering all that data would ease women's entrance into the astronaut corps. So she's typically just the villain who comes in to thwart her would-be sisters. She's like a Disney villain with no backstory. But when you look at her backstory, she's like the most record-setting pilot of the 20th century, saved LBJ's life, friends with Chuck Hagen,
exactly.
Friends with President Eisenhower. And you're like, there's no way she's only the villain. And
how did she save LBJ's life?
I love throwing that one out there because it's a great story.
Yeah.
So this was in 1948. They met in 1937 when she was trying to allocate funding for an aviation medical school in Texas, and he was a brand new Texas senator, congressman. And during his senatorial run in 1948, he got really sick. He had kidney stones that got so bad he couldn't walk down the hallway without throwing up and passing out. So Stuart Symington, who was then the first secretary of the newly minted Air Force, called her to Dallas because she knew that she always flew her own plane and that she could maybe help get him where he needed to go very discreetly, because discretion is key with politics, right?
Mm-hmm.
So she, by the way, had studied nursing in her previous life.
Yes.
She flew...
She's the female Walter Mitty here and Forrest Gump all rolled into one.
That's actually how I describe her. She's like the real Forrest Gump.
Yes.
Yeah. So she's got a very sick LBJ, an exhausted Lady Bird, and her campaign aide named Woodward, her maid Ellen, and her flight engineer Steve, all in the plane. LBJ is, like, sweating and, you know, wrapped up in bed, and she's flying this plane to get him from Dallas to the Mayo Clinic. And in the middle of the flight, he just screams. She leaves the cockpit, runs back, sees that he's vomiting all over the place. So he vomits on her. She cleans him up. She and Ellen douse him in rubbing alcohol and dab it off to kind of cool his fever. She flips him naked onto his stomach to give him a shot of painkillers in the butt, which makes him throw up all over her again. Mm-hmm. Finally, she's able to kind of soothe him down. He calms down. The painkillers kick in. He goes back to sleep. She and Ellen clean him up, swaddle him back up, put him in bed, and then she continues flying the plane. He gets into the Mayo Clinic where they're able to do a new procedure, break up the kidney stones, and he wins the election.
Voila. What a story. Oh, my gosh.
Wednesday. Yeah,
wow.
It's wild. It's really fun stuff.
Well, you know, and here it is. I mean, when you think about the breadth of talent that she embraced, I mean, nursing, you know, here it is. She's, you know, she flies, you know, she's a businesswoman.
Yeah.
She obviously had some political acumen as well. I mean, you're talking about somebody with a high intellect here.
Yeah, which is makes it even more interesting that she actually never had an education beyond the second grade. She grew up unbelievably poor in Florida, and that Dufuniak Springs is kind of where her family had roots, but she bounced around. Her dad worked in mills. She never had a chance to actually gain an education, but she was extremely street smart. She was extremely passionate about learning the things that she wanted to know about, be it learning how to, you know, fix an airplane engine. She couldn't read well enough to read a manual, but she could learn it by doing. She kind of learned everything by doing and asked the right questions and really knew how. And the other thing that was really on her side was she was married to Floyd Bostick Odlum, who's probably not a super familiar name to a lot of mm-hmm. people, but he's one of the robber barons who built America. He's right up there with the Vanderbilts and the Schwabs, and mm-hmm. they lost their money. So his name is not an enduring legacy, but he touched everything. I mean, he financially was able to finagle her way into being the first woman to fly a jet, which allowed her to be the first woman to break the sound barrier.
Exactly. Yeah. well, we've got about 3 minutes left. Let's talk about Jerry Cobb. Give us some background here.
Well, Jerry grew up in a very different realm than Jackie, which makes them really interesting to pair. She's born in 1931, and she learned to fly during the Second World War because her dad was actually able to get his license and get his own plane so that he could start training to hopefully fly for the Army. So she was around aviation from the time she was 12, and she didn't have the same financial and kind of connection advantages that Jackie had, but she had, you know, in her own description, flying was her life, and that's all she knew. So she really pursued it and was determined to say, you know, I know a girl who will do this. I know a girl who will do anything in a plane, and was able to really kind of find her little niche that way. And was so determined, she managed to actually, you know, fly a couple of records herself and ended up being the right woman in the right place at the right time to take the astronaut medical test. Because she was a young female pilot in good shape and knew a couple of the right people. And that's kind of where the story gets really interesting and where these two women start to interconnect. Because
I was going to ask, when did the Matrix come together where they crossed? Go ahead.
So it's this astronaut medical testing that when Randy Lovelace, the doctor who did the testing, announced it, that's when the media heard woman astronaut in the same sentence and put them together. And this testing, by the way, if you've seen The Right Stuff, it's, mm-hmm. you know, that scene where the guy's running down the hall with the enema bag. Like, it's that testing that she did. So
yes.
Randy Lovelace announces it. The press goes wild. Randy Lovelace is a very good friend of Jackie Cochran. And Floyd Odlum is bankrolling the clinic that tested Jerry.
Mm-hmm.
So Jerry starts bringing in other women to get tested because you need more data points. And Jackie starts kind of getting in because Randy Lovelace trusts her and wants to get her involved. So it ends up being these two women are trying to wrest control, take control of this women astronaut program that doesn't exist. And the two of them are battling out, and here's where their egos come into play. They're giving talks at the same event, and they're contradicting each other. So it's really this weird she said, she said that the media is picking and choosing what to promote. And, of course, NASA gets involved, but NASA's trying to go to the moon.
Yeah.
So what do you think is going to matter more for the space agency, the space race, or this woman saying, I want to go into space?
Yes.
In 1962. So that's where the two stories become very much enmeshed, and it's really interesting.
And, of course, at the time, you know, you say the space race and JFK's expressed vision of, you know, space flight. You know, this was a clear mission that America was behind, and this could be set aside quite easily, and especially when they weren't, you know, unified in their presentation of what they saw, right?
Exactly right.
Wow. The takeaway that you want the reader to get for fighting for space, Amy?
There is inspiration to be found all around, even if it's in fighting for what you believe is right.
Yeah, and the heck with that glass barrier. I mean, the barriers have been broken. I mean, they keep, for some reason, as much as they've been broken, you have some forces, and interestingly enough, even on the female side, that want to reconstruct a glass barrier, I guess, maybe to try to reinvent and maybe be the one to break it, I guess. I don't know, but it's already been busted. Amy Shiratidal and her book, Fighting for Space, Two Pilots and Their Historic Battle for Female Spaceflight. Book will be linked on our website. Thank you so much, Amy. Appreciate it.
I don't even recognize myself anymore.
I'm really worried about him. His addiction. I haven't seen him like this. Ever.
Hey, look, I never wanted to start using. I knew the drill, but I was out of options.
I just want to tell him it's not your fault. There are people out there who can help. People who have felt your pain. They know what you're going through.
This has to stop. I'm losing everything. Everyone.
You've been strong your whole life. You can do this, but you have to reach out for help.
It's time. I can do this.
Addiction is a disease, and diseases need treatment.
Call Quit Drugs 321 now at 800-377-1456. 800-377-1456. That's 800-377-1456. Paid for by the Detox and Treatment Helpline.